From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump this week alarmed global leaders by ordering B-1 bombers to fly over the Korean Peninsula just hours after a meeting with top presidential military advisors centered on discussing U.S. actions against North Korea. An Air Force spokesperson told reporters, quote, "This is a clear demonstration of our ability to conduct seamless operations with all of our allies anytime, anywhere." But it was also likely an attempt to call Kim Jong-un's bluff on an assertion of his, quote, "right to shoot down the U.S. bombers even when they're not yet inside the airspace border of our country." The show of U.S. force came at the same time that NBC News broke the story that Trump had asked for a tenfold increase in the U.S.'s nuclear weapons stockpile over the summer during a meeting. Anonymous sources at that meeting told NBC that after Trump walked out, his Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called the president an effing moron. My guest is John Rainwater, Executive Director of the group Peace Action. Welcome to the program, John.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So let's first talk about this meeting and what we now know as per anonymous officials, Trump's thinking is on nuclear weapons. And we've seen in the past, even in public, he has said during his campaigns, he has said things like, well, why do we have nuclear weapons if we don't use them? Which just points to how little he understands what's happening. And those officials at the meeting that told NBC what happened also seem to allude to the fact that he doesn't understand what the U.S.'s decades-long nuclear policy really is. So what are your thoughts on the president's understanding of U.S. nuclear policy?
Well, clearly he doesn't understand it. And probably many folks know this, but what he was looking at was slides of the U.S. nuclear arsenal stockpile of warheads over the years. And he saw a peak of roughly 30,000 in the 60s, and he saw it down now, and depending on what numbers he was looking at, we have between 4,000 and 7,000 warheads, but depending on how you count them. And he wanted to get back up to the number of warheads we had in the 60s. And that goes against not just non-proliferation good sense, but just basic U.S. military doctrine that, in fact, the number of warheads we have does not really tell us much about the power of the U.S. nuclear, quote unquote, deterrent. So he just basically doesn't know the simplest things about U.S. nuclear policy. And that's a real problem.
And of course, he is going after countries like North Korea and Iran over the issue of nuclear weapons while openly talking about wanting to or openly lauding the U.S.'s nuclear weapons. He does not accept that he said he wanted a tenfold increase in the U.S.'s nuclear weapons stockpile. What do you make of that? He calls it fake news and even actually threatened to revoke NBC's license over that.
Yeah, I think he's probably figured out that he made a mistake in terms of being overly focused on the number of warheads. And frankly, my concern is that is where the military establishment and Donald Trump do overlap. Even under the Obama administration, there were plans, and I'm sure many people know about this, to invest $1 trillion into completely revamping the U.S. nuclear arsenal. And now that number is going up under Donald Trump. I've seen estimates of $1.2 trillion. And regardless of how many warheads Donald Trump can push the military to have, what he will likely be successful if people don't really push back is in growing the amount of spending we have on the nuclear enterprise and in developing new weapon systems, in modernizing our nuclear weapons. And all of those things, as you alluded to, make it harder to deal with nonproliferation around the world when we're dealing with Iran or North Korea. It makes our nuclear policy, in a word, hypocritical. Mm-hmm. And that just makes it much harder to tamp down the dangers of nuclear weapons in this world.
Aren't we already spending a ridiculous amount of money to maintain our current nuclear stockpile, money that, you know, should and could be spent on things that actually benefit human beings?
It's absolutely true. I mean, the irony is, although the number of nuclear weapons have gone down in the arsenal from that high of 30,000, we're still spending at Cold War levels on nuclear weapons, both in the Department of Energy and in the Pentagon. So both on the weapons themselves and the delivery systems. So already we are wasting money that could go into education or healthcare or those sorts of things. But there's also this plan to quote unquote modernize, which really means completely redo our nuclear weapons infrastructure. And one of Donald Trump's very first executive orders was about ramping up nuclear weapons production and rebuilding this nuclear weapons stockpiles and infrastructure. And that's just going to make the problem that you're pointing to much, much worse. And so there needs to be a movement in Congress to stop this, to say we can't afford these weapons, and that these weapons actually are a liability. They don't make the country safer. They actually make us less safe.
What would a tenfold increase in the U.S. nuclear weapons stockpile mean? I mean, Trump is saying he didn't say that. And of course, it is a ludicrous thing to even consider, and it's probably not going to be considered, at least to the tune of tenfold. But just for kicks, let's talk about it. What would it mean?
Well, again, what it appears that he was looking at was the number of warheads.
I see.
Right now, depending on how you count the warheads, we have somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 nuclear warheads. It's important to point out that not only could we decimate Russia, but we could do the same to China with those warheads and just about any other adversary you can manufacture or come up with. We have more than enough warheads. So a tenfold increase would mean 40,000 warheads at least. And that's when we're already on our 4,000 warheads spending as much as we did during the Cold War. So it would break the bank completely is what it would do. And the more warheads you have, the more possible accidents you have, the more possible mistaken flights. In the military, they call it a broken arrow when you have some kind of mistake that could have led to a mistaken nuclear exchange. And that's the kind of thing that building up the nuclear weapons arsenal can do, is make us more vulnerable to those accidental launches.
Now, it's possible that Trump's war with Tillerson started over the summer after Tillerson realized the kind of president he was dealing with. I suppose the rest of us saw what he might have chosen not to see. But Trump has been hitting back in recent days, undermining his own Secretary of State's positions or attempts to do any kind of diplomacy after it was revealed that there was a back channel, communication between U.S. and North Korean officials. Trump simply tweeted, "It's never worked to talk to these to the North Koreans, and only one thing will work," which is of course a hugely ominous threat. But hasn't it worked, John, so far? Even if U.S.-North Korea relations are in terrible shape, hasn't the amount of diplomacy we've had in the past worked to at least keep it in a holding place?
That's true. I mean, the most success that we've had with North Korea, in some ways you could say, was during the Clinton administration, the Bill Clinton administration, in the 90s, when we had the agreed framework. Donald Trump keeps pointing back to that, saying that was a failure. But during the period that we were upholding the agreed framework, it wasn't perfect, but North Korea did freeze a lot of their programs. They went backwards on their plutonium path to nuclear weapons, and they did not develop a nuclear weapon during that time. So diplomacy is possible, and it was really the Bush administration walking away from that agreement, which was imperfect. We weren't upholding everything. North Korea wasn't upholding everything, but it was freezing their programs. The Bush administration walked away, and what we got was a nuclear test, and we got the current path that we're on. So the only thing that has worked is diplomacy. And you're, I think, pointing to the exact right thing of those back channels that Tillerson has and others in the State Department hopefully have with the North Koreans that can reopen those talks. And that's, you know, it's the opposite of what Trump's saying. That's the only possibility we have for dealing with the North Korean nuclear weapons program.
John, there was an AP poll of Americans and how they feel about Trump's belligerence on North Korea. And it looks like two-thirds of Americans polled say that Trump's war of words with North Korea is making the situation worse. AP classifies this or characterizes it as the fact that it's spooking most Americans. And indeed, a lot of, you know, Americans are scared and probably should be scared that Trump could be launching World War III.
I think that's exactly right. And I think all of us are experiencing that just talking to our friends and family. And what I hope doesn't happen is that people don't feel powerless, that they don't feel like, oh, Donald Trump's a madman and there's nothing we can do about it. I think we need to mobilize people in Congress, the people around Donald Trump, to advocate for diplomacy, to push for the diplomatic solution, that that back channel that Tillerson has becomes the type of intense diplomacy that we had during the Iran deal negotiations. So there are efforts starting to happen in Congress. We've seen a letter from a number of senators asking for the president to engage in diplomacy. We now have a bill by Representative Conyers, and I do believe that that is addressing this problem. People need to lobby their members of Congress to support diplomacy, to oppose military action. Let's not get paralyzed or disempowered by this very scary scenario. We have to rise up, if you will, and take action, I think, is the antidote.
John, how significant is the action of U.S. B-1 bombers flying over the Korean Peninsula? You know, and the Air Force spokesperson that I quoted saying that this is basically a clear demonstration of our ability to conduct seamless operations with all of our allies anytime, anywhere. I mean, if North Korea didn't interpret this as a threat, I don't know what they would have looked at it as.
I think that's right, and I think there's a number of dangers here. The most immediate danger is the danger of miscalculation, and that type of escalation can lead to a military exchange. The more on edge both countries are, the bigger the problem is. But there's another kind of more long-term problem, and that is the more we emphasize saber-rattling and military threats, the less likely it is that we can get to the table and negotiate a solution to this problem. And again, the only way we're going to be able to get North Korea, for example, you know, to freeze what they're doing with nuclear weapons and missile testing is to freeze the type of military actions that the United States is doing. And the longer we rely on military threats and military posturing, the harder it may be to get to the negotiating table.
And also, let's talk finally about whether you think there are forces within the Pentagon, within the U.S. military, that may be able to temper Trump's positioning. Because if he is, you know, first not really clearly understanding the US's decades-long nuclear deterrent policy, and then second, simply sort of running roughshod over it. I imagine there's a lot of forces, judging by the number of leaks coming out of the White House, that people are alarmed. Do you have any hope that there are generals who will hopefully temper Trump? I mean, they can't stop him from tweeting. That's the problem.
That's for sure. I think there's kind of Trump's most extreme rhetoric about things like using nuclear weapons, where I think he would be tempered by a lot of people, both in the White House, in the military. And the question is, given the power of the presidency, can they temper him enough? That's why we support a bill that's in Congress right now that would give Congress authority when it comes to a nuclear first strike to have to declare war before the president, who currently has all the power when it comes to launching a nuclear attack. He doesn't have to listen to his advisors to give that power to Congress. And so we're supporting that bill by Congressman Liu and Senator Markey, and hope others will support it as well. There's another problem, though, and that's where Trump is more in alignment with his military advisors. And there is this plan to expand the nuclear weapons arsenal,
right,
that most people in the military support. And
even if they are clear they don't want to use them, they do support expanding the arsenal.
Yes, and there are many, you know, that's a boon to the military-industrial complex,
right,
whether it's the military or the defense contractors, the stockholders. When we spend $1.2 or more trillion dollars on that effort, a lot of people are making a lot of money. And that's where there's alignment, and Congress needs to weigh in because they have the power of the purse strings to put a brake on that, because I don't think the military is going to put a brake on that.
John, give out our website for Peace Action.
It is www.peaceaction.org.
We'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for covering this.
My guest is John Rainwater, Executive Director of Peace Action. We've been discussing Trump's nuclear ambitions. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.